This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Play the ball on the show.
Seattle Seahawks trying to continue what has been a historically great start for them and have a moment against a Baltimore team that's been a little bit up and down. They've had some big wins. They had an overtime victory over Pittsburgh in the game where the Steelers ended up losing Mason Rudolph in that game, going down to their number three quarterback. They also were blown out at home by a Cleveland team that has also been up and down. They're going to have to contain Lamar Jackson, Paul. What do you think the biggest challenge for the Seahawks in this game is?
They're well coached. I know they've been up and down this season, but unlike the Cleveland Browns, who also have been up and down, John Harbaugh is one of the better coaches in the NFL, one of the coaches I respect the most in the NFL. And on top of that, in Lamar Jackson, you just have something that's completely unique among NFL quarterbacks in that you have somebody who actually can throw it down the field, maybe not accurately, but also take off and run. Marcus Mariota, if he had ever developed the ability to throw the football past 10 yards, he actually might have turned into a pretty good quarterback, but unfortunately he never had that ability and he became a check down Charlie. Jackson is not that. And on top of that, some of the moves that the Ravens made this offseason, yeah, losing C.J. Mosley hurt, but bringing in Mark Ingram I think was huge for this Ravens team, which looks like right now with this rushing attack of theirs, one of the most dangerous in the league.
That question about Lamar Jackson, how you defend him, it's a perfect entry point for Michael Bumpus, who joins us here for Blue 42.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, fight!
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Morning, Bump.
Good morning.
How difficult is it going to be for the Seahawks to contain Lamar Jackson on Sunday?
It's going to be pretty difficult. I mean, the guy ran for 150 yards last week, threw for over 200. The thing that scares me about Lamar is that, you know, most of these mobile quarterbacks are like, they have 40-meter speed, like 40-yard dash speed. This dude has 100-meter speed. Like, he can really take it to the house from 80 yards out, 70 yards out. Then you combine that with a Mark Ingram in the backfield who helps the run game. It's just, you know, this quarterback scares me the most out of any quarterback we've seen just because of how athletic he is. And he can toss the football. You know, he might not be super accurate right now, but he can toss the football. And it seems like he's made good decisions so far. He has 11 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. But he's shown big playability, and at times the Hawks have shown that they can give up the big play. So it's going to be tough. I say containing him would be maybe under 100 yards rushing and about 200 yards throwing, but we'll see if we can get it done.
What are the comparable quarterbacks to him? Because I look at him, it seems, I mean, he's fast like Vic was. Vic had such a huge arm, and Vic at a couple of different points was really playing like the best player in the league, so I don't want to put that sort of bar up there, but it seems like His quickness is on a level where you could at least compare, or it's reminiscent of Vic.
Yeah, you know, when I look at him, I see like three quarterbacks in one. I see the slipperiness of a Russell Wilson. I see like the burst of a Kyler Murray type, and then I see it's a mix of all three, and that's what makes him dangerous for the third.
I mean, Lamar Jackson's so good, sometimes it disrupts your phone signal.
I know, seriously. Like, he will jam your frequencies, get up in your business. Let's try question two. All right, Bump. No Dwayne Brown, no DJ Fluker. I think we saw the configuration if both can't go. George Fant at left tackle. Jamarco Jones, who's done a pretty good job at right guard. Do you have concerns if those two vets are out again this week?
And we're going to get Bump back on the phone, but like you said, you know, Lamar Jackson, we're just going to blame this one on Lamar Jackson. We're going to get a better connection here in just a minute.
Lamar Jackson has taken on Bill Belichick-esque tactics and has decided
Weird.
He doesn't want the city of Seattle to know his
weaknesses.
How to
game plan against him.
Exactly. Smart man.
What do you think about the offensive line? Are they playing well? They had Myles Garrett has 3 sacks, and last week,
He's back, folks.
All right. Bump, what did you feel about George Fant and Jamarco Jones, the way they played last week without the vets in there?
You hear Pete Carroll talk about DeMarco Jones. He's pleased. George Fant. Pete Carroll says he's pleased. I mean, when you rush for over 100 yards, you protect your quarterback for the most part. You got to say that those guys are doing a good job.
Yeah, and I think they really finished the game strong, too. I understand there's definitely limitations compared, especially in the case of George Fant with Dwayne Brown. But at the same time, you want to see your players get better over the course of a game and not get demoralized and not say to themselves, well, I'm going up against Myles Garrett. This isn't my day. I'll get it next week. And that's not what George Fant did on Sunday.
No, it's really a blessing in disguise. It sucks that we have some guys out, but it allows these backups, these number twos, to get valuable time, you know, because you're gonna call on these guys later on in the season. It's the nature of the game. Guys go down, guys get hurt. So it's unfortunate we have some guys out, but the good thing about it is these backups are getting reps and they're performing at a high level doing it.
Bump, yesterday you described Earl Thomas and Russell Wilson, the matchup between these two, as a chess match. Who do you think has the edge in said chess match right now? Because, of course, they practiced against one another. Earl Thomas is with a new defense, so that maybe makes things a little bit more difficult for Russell Wilson to prepare for. Who has the edge?
You know, honestly, I have to go with Russell Wilson. You know, Earl Thomas has an idea what his offense wants to do, but at the end of the day, he has an assignment. Whether it's D-thirds, it's a quarters, it's a man, he has to do his job. His advantage is he can prepare his defense on what to expect. But Russell can physically move a defense with his eyes, with his body language. He can diagnose a defense. This is a cover three, so I'm going to move this safety with my eyes to get this route open. I think where Earl is dangerous is sometimes he goes kamikaze and he just jumps on a route that you don't really expect him to jump on and he makes a play. But I got to give the edge to Russell Wilson just because he has the ball in his hands and just with his body language, he can manipulate what a defense is doing.
I'm very curious as to what tendencies Earl Thomas knows about Russell Wilson that maybe he can take advantage of. Because I think that for Russell, seeing Earl in this new system, Bump, maybe he plays a little bit differently than he's played in the past.
You know, if there's a tendency that Earl can pick up on, I would say it's just in the scramble. And that's where Russell has been the best so far this year. You know, he can tell his defense, you know, when he rolls right, this is what he's looking for. You know, there's no set play for a scramble, but he can get his guys in the right position mentally. Like, hey, if he's rolling to the right on this play, this is where the holds are. So it's a tough task for anybody to try to shut down Russell Wilson. And you can't expect Earl to have all the answers to the test, but he can definitely set his guys up for success on certain plays. Also, there are some plays that Earl hasn't seen yet. You know, Sean Harmer has opened up the playbook. So there's a slight advantage for Earl because he kind of knows some tendencies, but end of the day, the defense has to react to what the offense is doing. They have to react to how they line up and the play calling or whatnot. So it's going to be a nice little match, but I expect Russell to have the edge on it.
That is Blue 42 brought to you by Frost Brew Coors Light. That's one of the things, Bump, that Russell Wilson has become better at, especially over this season, that you've seen, whether it's more command at the line of scrimmage, that he is more decisive about where he's going to go with the ball and getting his team into place. Probably underscored by the fact the headset goes out and the offense not only doesn't miss a beat, but kind of hits a next gear. It seems like he's got more command of things at the line of scrimmage than ever.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a perfect example of that. The headset goes out and the offense seems to flow better than it has all game, you know, and that just shows Russell's preparation, his knowledge of the playbook, and the trust of Schottenheimer. If Russell was a rookie quarterback first maybe couple of years, he would not go to the line and check. Schottenheimer would be like, hey, you run the play that's called. But right now he's loosened up the leash a little bit, and he's letting him go, rightfully so. And what has that done? I mean, 14 touchdowns, zero picks, 5-1, the boys are rolling.
I wonder if that makes Schottenheimer think to himself, you know what? Let's let Wilson do this a couple of times. Let's maybe say, hey, okay, well, we definitely have a clear idea of what we want to do offensively, but maybe once or twice a game, you go no huddle, you completely throw the defense through a loop because they're expecting balance. They're expecting the runs on first down that you see so often from Chris Carson.
Yeah, I mean, I think as an offensive coordinator, it's hard to just let go and let your quarterback do his thing unless you have a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady.
But you got a Russell Wilson.
But as I'm saying, Russell Wilson is entering. I feel like we're seeing evolution before our eyes right now. You know, he's always been a great quarterback. He's proven it every single year. But now he's entering a stage in his career where, you know, the coaches trust him to make plays. They trust him to get guys in the right spot. This is the second year with Schottenheimer. That first year was a little rocky because he's getting to know the system, new language, new verbiage, new relationship. But you see it now. You see it with Russell's decision-making. A guy who understands an offense doesn't throw picks 6 weeks into the season, and that's what we're seeing here.
That the contrast between the way the teams use the quarterback speed, I think, is very interesting. Because if I was Lamar Jackson, there's at least a little bit of me that would be worried about the kind of hits that I'm taking.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you compare that, and you're seeing the cumulative effect of that. Cam Newton's not the best comparison in that Cam's never a 4.2 guy, 4.3 guy. He's not as fast as Lamar Jackson. But the similarity is that both are playing in offenses where they don't mind the quarterback getting hit. And there's a question about whether that's the best long-term plan for the team because you're putting an asset at risk. But if I'm a quarterback, if I'm Lamar Jackson, I'm thinking long and hard and looking at not just where Cam Newton is now, but what happened to Robert Griffin III, about is this the best long-term thing for my career as a quarterback? Because, man, their run game, it's not designed to keep him protected in the way that Seattle's run game, even when they used Russell as a running back, it's designed in a way that he's not supposed to get hit.
Yeah, Baltimore's offense is quarterback run first, you know, sprint options, zone reads. They want him to run the football. And I don't think it's a recipe for success long term. You look at running backs. Running backs hit 28, 29, 30. All of a sudden, they're ancient because they're taking all these hits. You know, and if Lamar can do a good job of getting down and getting out of bounds, I think he can prolong that. But what's really going to prolong it is just becoming a better passer and opening up the playbook a little bit. I think they're using his abilities now because that's what he's best at. And if they do a good job at developing his arm, developing his mental reading defenses and learning the offense, then that will add another 3 or 4 years into his career. But you look at history, this is football. The more hits you take, the more likely you are to go down, the shorter your career is going to be. So long term, I don't think this is the recipe for success. Short term, he's balling and they're getting it done.
And short-term, Pete Carroll had some interesting thoughts. One specific word about Lamar Jackson earlier this week.
He's as good as we've ever seen. He's as fast and as elusive as we've seen. You know, Cam Newton has always been really difficult to play against, you know, and they have so much offense and all that. These guys, likewise, they seem even more apt than with Cam to just let him go and run and play football just like you see the guys playing in college, you know. And he's tough and physical and explosive and creative, and he's throwing the ball well too, you know. So it's a real nightmare. It's very difficult.
A real nightmare. And Bump, my question for you, where is the nightmare at its worst for the Seahawks defense? Safeties, the linebackers, the defensive line, who should be most concerned going up against a guy like this?
You know, I really think it's on the back end with the safeties. You know, the D-line up front, these guys are used to run stop and making tackles. We got the best linebacking core in the NFL. It really comes down to those safeties because when you're one-on-one with a Lamar Jackson in space, anything can happen. You know, when you're on that first level, that second level, it's kind of like a traffic jam. You're trying to weave your way through. You're more likely to make plays. But if he can break that first and second level and get on a safety and put a move on him, I mean, that's the potential for a big play. So those safeties, man, they just have to really break down, be patient, wrap up and hold on, and just hope help is coming soon.
That is Michael Bumpus. Bump, we always love catching up with you, and it'll be fun to see exactly what happens in this game. Two teams that look an awful lot alike. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Bump.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That was Michael Bumpus. Michael Bumpus there with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. The Seahawks are facing a team that is very familiar. I love to hear how excited Pete gets for these kind of matchups. There's so many coaches take the approach that this is for all the enjoyment we get out of football, that they don't tend to like it all that much. that their job doesn't give them all that much satisfaction. And Pete's the exact opposite, where he's like, man, this is going to be fun. I love playing against our guys. Guy that flipped me off on the way out. I love the opportunity to get out and compete with them, and there's nothing quite like it. It is a zest or enthusiasm for life that is quite refreshing.
Yeah, it really is, because I think we're both just the opposite of that, aren't we? Like, we are people that would have a difficult time maybe looking at someone like Earl Thomas coming back and being in a different uniform, even if it was because of our own decision and thriving in said situation, you know? I think that
I would say that I would have this desire to have the last word.
Yeah.
Like that there would be this point of like, I want my decision to be proven right. I want my decision about, hey, of all the different players that have come through, they extended Marshawn Lynch, they extended Cam Chancellor, they extended Michael Bennett, they've extended Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner. Really, it's Sherm whom they released, and then it's Earl who they didn't resign, that they've kind of turned the page on with those guys. And there would be part of me that would want my evaluation to be determined right, because look, that's a gamble or a decision that has yet to play out. We don't know if Seattle made the right decision. We don't know if Seattle made the right decision in not holding on to Earl Thomas. It'll depend on how he continues to play. And quite frankly, it's going to depend on whether Seattle can get the back end of its secondary figured out.
And I don't think they have. I think, in fact, at this point, they are maybe experimenting a little bit more. And I'm curious as to how many snaps Marquise Blair will get on Sunday, because he has, I think, 12 on defense thus far this year, but he had 8 this past Sunday. So, as a guy who at Utah was playing a lot of strong safety, who is now being asked to do some free safety things, there's definitely a little bit of a learning curve there. But don't you want, against a team like the Baltimore Ravens, who have a Lamar Jackson, someone who maybe has a little bit of that Earl Thomas light skill set compared to someone like Tedrick Thompson out there, someone who you know can deliver a hit, who can knock somebody down. And look, Tedrick can do that too. We've definitely
Do you
Tedrick
feel better about how Tedrick's played? He's had picks in the past two games.
I think
one was extraordinary. The one he had in the fourth quarter against the Rams was an absolutely extraordinary play. The other one, don't sell that one short too. Shaquille Griffin knocks the pass that was thrown for Jarvis Landry, kind of reaches in and tips it, but Tedrick's there for it. Do you feel better that he's trending upward? Because I look at him and I'm like, I'm not convinced he's the long-term guy there. But I'm not as sure as I was 4 weeks ago that they need to get somebody else back there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was very easy for everyone to sit back after he missed that pass to John Ross for the touchdown and say, oh, man, what's going on here? That's a high school level kind of mistake. But I think he's really bounced back from that. He is playing with a lot more confidence. And I feel like he's getting a lot of positive reinforcement in the locker room, too. And I'll just go back to Thursday, going into the locker room after the game and just seeing how excited everyone was for Tedrick in that spot. And then he makes another play this past week, too. And when you got a guy like Shaquille Griffin out there, he's making everyone's jobs a lot easier as well. Like, that is the foundational rock that they have to build upon in this secondary. He's playing at a Pro Bowl level thus far this year. I think per the metrics, he's like ranked 6th. Or something as far as all cornerbacks this year. And when you look at that and you have somebody like that who can at the very least match up with whoever the opposition's number one wide receiver is, that definitely makes it a lot easier for a safety. So I like what I've been seeing out of Tedrick definitely over the last couple of weeks. But I am fascinated by the idea of Marquise Blair getting some more snaps as well.
Biggest question for you. Is it the pass rush or is it the secondary right now for their defense?
Secondary 100% for this week. Because I still feel the pass rush has the talent, and now Jerron Reed's back, and that should open things up for Clowney and for Ziggy Ansah, in theory.
No sacks the past 2 weeks. And they're coming off a game where they had, what, 3 picks?
Yeah. And I mean, you wonder, why is it not happening? Because you have these two guys in Clowney and Ansah who should be beating the people that are across from them. I really do think that Jerron Reed is going to make things work for them, because now there's going to be attention focused on the interior. He might make plays of his own, and that's going to lead to a lot of one-on-one, I think, on the right and on the left for both Ansah and for Clowney. So now I look at the safeties, and Tedrick Thompson's playing with a lot of confidence right now. But now you're going up against a quarterback that you don't know what he is going to do. Like, he can extend a play. Is he going to take off and run? If he takes off and run, he can get 8 yards on you very easily, like without any hesitation. He's so fast, that's something he can do in just in a second, where when he does that, if you're a safety and you come up, all of a sudden he might stop and throw it down the field and you might have blown an assignment. That is, I think, something that's going to be really difficult for any safety this week, because that is, you're going to have to play and do your job to be the last guy, to be the back line of defense. But against a guy like Lamar Jackson, you also have a responsibility to be help. And this is a very tricky situation. And all these safeties, they better be really, really careful with how much they commit to trying to stop Lamar when he does take off for, I imagine, 10 or 15 runs a game.
The styles of these two teams are going to make this an interesting game, because neither of these teams fits into the model of the current NFL offense, which is to push the ball down the field as far and as fast as you can. That's more and more offenses, and maybe it's because everybody's trying to hire someone who either bears a passing physical resemblance to Sean McVay or has some sort of like young, innovative offensive approach on their resume. But that is the trend in the NFL. Find guys who will push the ball as far and as fast as they can go. Neither of these teams takes that approach on offense. In fact, if you're going to use a boxing metaphor, both are kind of counterpunchers. They're more than content to get this game into the second half of it being single digit scoring. They want to keep from exposing themselves. They don't want to make mistakes. And as long as the other team isn't pulling away, they are not going to be overwhelmingly aggressive. They'll take their moments for big shots, but this is not a team. Neither of these teams comes out with the approach of like, you know what? We want to get the ball and score a touchdown each and every time we get the ball. They're content to play field position. They're content to play the long game in that way. So in some senses, you've got two counterpunchers that it's going to be each waiting to see what the other tries to do and who lands the first big strike.
The teams don't. Russell Wilson doesn't as far as taking shots. I think Lamar Jackson still has a little bit of that I want to make a big play in him. And that's something that could be coached out of him, but do you want to coach it out of him? If you are the Ravens coaching staff, would you want to tell him, I don't really want you to chuck it up? And I'll go back to a couple of weeks ago. It was down the stretch of the game. Was it against the Chiefs? Off the top of my head, I forget. But Jackson made two just absolutely moronic throws. And they both worked out for the Ravens. Like, one of them, he threw from one side of the field to the other, basically like 53 yards across the field, lobbed it up in the air, like threw it straight up essentially as a prayer, and a Ravens receiver came down with it. I think these were both against the Kansas City Chiefs.
It was both against the Chiefs.
Yeah, he'll chuck it up. He'll chuck it up. And here's the thing. Like, the Seahawks secondary the last couple of weeks has been in the right place at the right time. If they're in the right place at the right time again, they should come away with a couple of takeaways in this one. You know those aren't going to come from Russell Wilson. That's, I think, the big opportunity for the Seahawks. Can you get Lamar Jackson in a spot where he decides to improvise and improvises poorly?
It's interesting to see. Lamar Jackson's his completion percentage has come up this year. Like, it's better than it was. He's completing more than 60% of his passes, because that was always the question of, he is not as accurate a passer. Like, that's not part of his skill set. I do think that Seattle has the advantage here when it comes to a guy's propensity for making mistakes.
Oh, definitely.
Because I think Lamar Jackson is a guy that will get aggressive. He's been picked off three times so far, or I'm sorry, five times so far this year. Russell hasn't been picked off yet. The fact that there, and that is such a huge factor in how Seattle approaches games, that's you want to put him in a position, and if Seattle pulls ahead and Baltimore gets behind, that's going to put even more urgency on it.
Yeah.
So maybe more so than most games, it's important for Seattle to start at least a little bit better than they usually do.
Yeah, get out to a nice early start and force Lamar Jackson to take shots, because I think if they do get themselves in a situation, Baltimore, where they're down a score, two scores, something like that, like they were against Kansas City, that Lamar is going to open things up. And he's going to say, I'm going to get this team back in the game no matter what it takes to get back in. So that means the secondary, be in the right place at the right time, and you might continue to get this unbelievable boon and harvest of interceptions and takeaways that they've been getting the last couple of weeks.
That idea of where Lamar Jackson ranks among the list of young quarterbacks in this league, I think we're still sorting that out and seeing where he is. We're also still trying to figure out this defense. There were a lot of abstract descriptions. Is that an accurate characterization?
Very accurate.
There a lot of abstract thinking about the Seahawks defense. We'll explain what Paul means next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
This hour, Danny Gallant, brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Got a little bit of feedback on the text line. We've got a listener from the 425. I haven't listened to the radio in a few months. Had to get away from my Mariners-related depression. We'll give you some uplifting news in 15 minutes. But now I'm back discovering the new shows. Don't know this Paul guy, but he seems pretty good. My question is this. When you were trying to pick a name for the show, did you at least consider Goofus and Gallant? Thank you. I'll take your answer off the air. Was that considered, Paul?
Always wanted to be a Goofus, but I'm burdened.
That would have been really funny. You would be Goofus and I would be Gallant.
Yeah. Which one of you colors outside the lines? Because, I mean, if Highlights Magazine taught us anything, it's how to be a Goofus and how to be a Gallant.
100%. Oh, no, it's a Gallant. It's a Gallant, not a Gallant.
I forgot you're French-Canadian.
Where are you? Yeah, I know, even though that's probably not the actual pronunciation of the name. One of my high school football coaches used to call me Gallant just to drive me crazy. And it worked. Congratulations, Coach Field. You motivated me to be a better football player.
So it is Danny and Gallant. And there was a lot. The last thing we need at this point is a lot of loose talk, Paul, or abstract descriptions of the Seattle defense. And people were not being specific enough for your tastes.
Yeah, we're hearing that things, especially when it comes to the pass rush.
I love it. We're hearing.
aren't as bad as we're seeing.
Right, that's Pete Carroll, right? Pete's telling us Baker Mayfield got the ball out quick. Like, all of the different things of, like, you have no sacks, Pete. Well, you know, we did a pretty good job, and you can't always make it. The quarterback got the ball out quick.
I will give him the benefit of the doubt, and I will also give the pass rush the benefit of the doubt from the perspective that I think that Jaron Reed being back aboard, along with Jadeveon Clowney and Ziggy Ansah, they should all help one another actually generate a little bit more pressure. But when you hear comments like this one, when we go to the cut sheet, cut 11 from Bobby Wagner, you're hearing about things on defense being better, but it's not really clear specifically what is better.
I feel like we are closer than last year at this point. I feel like, you know, we have a lot of improvement to go. There has been some good games. There's been some not so good games. We had some games where we stopped the run. We had some games where we didn't. We had some games where we stopped the pass. We had some games where we didn't. And so I think the main thing is working on the consistency and, you know, doing it over a span of time would be the thing that I feel like we have to do better.
So the specific part of that I heard, Danny, is closer. Do you think that the Seahawks defense is so close to where it needs to be right now, like a force field?
No. And I don't know do you think he means closer in terms of how close they are to playing that well?
I don't know.
Or do you think he means closer just in terms of the camaraderie, or as Dave Wyman would call it, the common karate?
It could be that. I mean, there definitely is no Earl Thomas anymore, and perhaps everyone is now thinking one hive mentality as opposed to having Earl Thomas, who looked at things a little bit differently, I think approached things a little bit differently.
But Earl was gone. Earl only played the first four games last season. Here's what I think. I think that when you have a defense that is winning, everybody talks about how people are together and trust. Like, those are the two things that happen. And when they lose, it starts being the little things about, like, guys filling their gaps and being assignment correct. And I think that these are, rather than actual trends that speak to what the defense is doing well or doing poorly, that they're more just about talking points following success or defeat, whether it's sort of the little things. Because I look at it, I think this defense will get better. I think, but that's an act of faith. I know this defense, as it's currently playing, will eventually be a huge problem because they're giving up way too much.
You're right. There's a lot of yards. There are takeaways, that's for sure, but takeaways are never a certainty. They're somewhat random. Going back to something you said just a little bit ago. Okay, so Earl Thomas, he suffers the injury in Phoenix, correct?
Okay,
so you have multiple
Bad
guys going down in that game. Right. So 2 weeks later was week seven. Maybe he thinks, okay, as a unit, they are a little bit more cohesive because there is no Earl Thomas that they're adjusting to the departure of after a couple of weeks. But it's a very abstract term. Closer.
Yes, you're right.
Like, yeah. I don't know what that means. And I'll just say from this perspective, whether it's the pass rush or anything, there's a lot of overwhelming positivity in the locker room, which I'm not saying is a bad thing. In fact, it's probably a good thing. But I'm wondering if there is, on that defensive side of things, maybe a little bit of frustration with the lack of pass rush production. Because they're probably seeing those guys in front and they're thinking to themselves just the same way that we are, and probably the same way that Jadeveon Clowney and Ziggy Ansah are thinking to themselves, we are really good players. Why is it not happening? Why are we a couple of seconds slow? Why are we not getting to the quarterback?
I definitely think that there's a sense where they're searching for a love. Those guys know they're giving up too many yards. They know they forced only two punts against the Cleveland Browns. And there's some weird things in that game. There's a long kickoff return that set up a short field. There were a couple other things that helped give the Browns offense a boost, but they only forced two punts. One of which they blocked, which is great. But they only forced two punts, and we saw what the Rams did in the final, two and a half quarters, mm-hmm. where they really scored at will. The defense knows that they're giving that up, and the question is whether they're going to be able to improve. I think it's reasonable to expect the pass rush to get better. I think it's reasonable to think that with Ansah getting healthier, even though he was limited in practice yesterday or did not practice because of an ankle injury, that with Jadeveon Clowney and Ansah, they're going to get better, and now Jaron Reed being back, that part's going to improve. I don't know if it'll improve enough, but it's reasonable. I'm not sure about the secondary. I think the secondary remains the big question in my mind, and it's not the corners right now. It's the safeties. Do they have playmakers at safety? And I'm not convinced that Bradley McDougald and Tedrick Thompson. I'm not convinced they're going to be your two starters when the season's over. I'm not sure which is more tenuous right now, because I think Tedrick's played a little bit better the past 2 weeks. McDougal missed yesterday's practice. But I agree with you, and I think that one of the most frustrating things about analyzing a team's defense is that you do just get abstract thinking when you ask them, what are you doing well? Instead of, well, you know what? Our linebackers are really good at being able to defend the pass, and that allows us to be better against the run. Instead of that, you get, we're just closer this year, and you can tell everybody's on the same page.
Right.
And, well, and what does that really mean?
I don't know.
You're on the same page.
I think what it ultimately means is that everyone can communicate with one another, but that doesn't really mean a whole lot of anything. You could have a defense that communicates great with one another that could be getting absolutely destroyed 63-0 in a football game. You know, like they might be communicating well, hey, things are bad. They're bad. You know, they're really bad. I want to get off the field and go home.
I hear you. You have communicated that message very clearly to me.
Right, exactly.
Actually, from that regard, Earl Thomas was a really good communicator last year in Arizona, right?
He did with his hand signals, yes.
Yeah, it was lift out, and if anybody had any questions about exactly who that was aimed at, he let them know about that later.
Exactly, no, he communicated
that one
after the
was
fact.
For Pete.
So going back to Jaron Reed, who you just mentioned a little bit ago, Jaron Reed also was speaking in somewhat abstract commentary about the Seahawks defense and what he noticed while he was watching the team and while he was basically, you know, sitting and I guess not sleeping, waiting to get back to practice. He said this when he finally got back, quote, just the fact that they know how to finish stood out to me about the defense. How to finish. They know how to bounce back. Now, there's actually a little bit of something to this. If there's a bad play or something, they move on to the next play. But they know how to finish, Danny O'Neill. Do you 100% buy that? Because with the way that the Rams game went, I have a hard time buying it.
They've had two interceptions out of the final last three possessions of the game, right? Because they had Tedrick Thompson's interception that could have sealed it, didn't. Then it was a missed field goal. The next week against Cleveland, they have an interception. Both of those plays come off of tipped passes, right?
Right.
And I don't want to say that that's luck, because it's not entirely luck. Both of those players made really good adjustments to the ball, and it speaks to their skill as players. But that's not exactly where you're like, you slammed the door shut on them. Like, no, there was a mistake that was made, and you took advantage of it. Do they know how to finish? No. I don't think that this defense has shown me the ability to slam the door shut on people. I don't think, because usually that's the pass rush.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where the pass rush comes in. So the idea of the them being closers, they don't get the coffee yet. They have not gotten a cup of coffee. Chris Carson's got a cup of coffee. Russell Wilson's got a cup of coffee. No coffee for the defense yet.
A decaf coffee?
Nah, not even decaf.
How about hot tea?
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers. Coffee is absolutely for closers.
Coffee's for closers only.
Closers only. Second place is a set of steak knives. Third place, you're fired. From the 206, new show name, The Captain and O'Neill. Playoff of Captain and O'Neill. Would you want to be the captain?
Too much pressure.
Too much pressure.
No, I want to be the boat fool.
The boat fool. How about the DNP Morning Express? Choo choo.
Oh, I like that.
The DNP Morning Express.
Well, anything that involves a train. As a Thomas the Tank Engine obsessor as a child.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
You were big time into Thomas the Tank Engine?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was a big fan of James. He was really cocky. Big fan of Gordon, who was always cross, as the British like to describe angry people. Percy, I was annoyed by Percy. My parents used to try to scare me by making the Percy face, which is typically like the round cheeks and a giant mouth, like open and weird. Yeah, I'm sorry. I could go all day about Thomas the Tank Engine.
All right. It is Danny and Gallant.
You don't want none of that.
All right. Coming up.
Danny and Gallant and coming up next. No, it's Gallant.
Yeah,
right?
It's Gallant.
Danny and Gallant.
Thank you.
I've got a new jersey that I'm going to get. Number 44, ooh, and I'll tell you what it says, thanks to Julio Rodriguez next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Danny and Gallant right back at you. I am Paul Gallant. Danny O'Neill is with me, and we're trying to contact Danny. Danny boy. Oh, Danny boy. So, look, Danny, I'm really intrigued that you are going out of your way to get yourself a jersey.
Yes. It's not happened in a long, long time. I currently have one jersey with another man's name and
only
number
one.
On it.
Okay.
And it's a number 8 Gary Carter Montreal Expos jersey, which I guess I could break out to cheer for the Nationals in the World Series, but we'll wait and see who they're playing there. I don't feel a whole lot of connection to the current Washington Nationals. The fact that the Mariners are now the last team left that has not made the World Series with the Nationals reaching there. Bleacher Report took pains to point that out, and then they had a picture that they put out on Twitter with it, saying that, well, it's a wincing Kyle Seager pointing out the futility. And then within, I don't know, about an hour, two of the Mariners' top prospects each responded to it. The first was Jared Kelenic, who has rocketed through the minor league system. He's the prospect they got, a former first-round pick that was chosen out of a Wisconsin high school. He was the main player acquired in the Robinson Cano Edwin Diaz trade. And his said things change, and then he had thumbs up emoji. Julio Rodriguez, who had a wrist injury this past season, which has kind of slowed his ascent. He played for the Modesto Nuts last year, and that kind of slowed his ascent and made it where I was like, okay, that Julio Rodriguez is exciting as well. And he said, that's about to change. And then he had a fist. So it was of the two proclamations, I would say Julio Rodriguez had the edge in swagginess, Paul.
Yes, I liked Julio Rodriguez.
Also, in later hours, Noel V. Marte added into this and then added, you know, things can change, I think. It was something of the effect. So he also got in on the action.
He did, but it's still Julio Rodriguez's flag would be the firmest that was planted in there. And I declared that now made my Julio Rodriguez. I generally wouldn't like such a proclamation like that, where we're kind of putting the cat in front of the horse at this point, or the cart in front of the horse, or whatever the expression
would
be.
Cat would be able to get out of the way of the horse, but you're right. You don't want to have
that's
a cat in front of
that's
the horse.
That's probably true. And you get, so I was like, well, what jersey do I get? Do I get a Modesto Nuts jersey? Which is awesome because it says Nuts on the front. It's a little tougher because they don't personalize them. They don't personalize those jerseys.
Okay.
You can't buy it. And what number do I get? Do I get a Mariners jersey? Like, that would kind of make sense. I was interested by the Javelinas, who Julio Rodriguez is playing with currently in the Arizona Fall League. They have an awesome hat. Like, the Mariners Arizona Fall League team, the Javelinas is a fantastic hat, but they had no jerseys available that I could find. And so that led the proprietor of Lookout Landing to actually ask Julio Rodriguez what jersey number I should get. Because the other thing is, he's worn number 3. Number 3 Rodriguez jersey for the Mariners has already been worn by a guy who is only recently have I forgiven. And kind of he's come off my sports grudge list. And I now like Alex. I now like Alex Rodriguez. I find him acceptable now, where I was intolerant of him for a long time.
Being a broadcaster will do wonders for you.
Yeah, and it's also, I think he and J-Lo are kind of cute together. I think all of that, he's paired himself with an age-appropriate partner. Both Aww. Of them used to be bigger stars. Yeah, no, I've turned the page on A-Rod. But they asked, And he was asked by lookoutlanding.com, Julio Rodriguez was asked which jersey number I should wear, and he specified it. We'll get to that sound in a little bit, but he explained that I should wear number 44, and it should say J-Rod Show on the back.
Here we go.
What number jersey should Danny buy to support you, Julio?
The 44.
44 with J-Rod Show on the back, right?
Yeah, you got it.
Faux. I like it.
So 44, J-Rod Show. That sounds fantastic.
I like it. 44, sacred number. Also, in case you don't know, for those who go to the fine Harvard of Central New York, Syracuse University, you know that 44 is a sacred number worn by guys like Jim Brown and also Floyd Little. Listen, it's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic number. So I like it. I like it, Danny. Wear it. Ernie Davis.
Hi, Danny.
Oh, yeah, that was Julio saying
That's
hi
so
to me.
That's so cute.
It was. It was very nice.
And J-Rod Show is how he hashtags everything on Twitter. You know, he wants to be that face of the franchise, and he has since, I mean, keeping in mind that he's still ridiculously young, but he has wanted to be that person and has kind of, you know, assumed that role, just like Jared Kelnick. And I think they are going to push each other in that regard. They're going to make themselves the best version of the players that they could be.
Is Kyle Lewis going to overtake them all?
Well, the great news is that he doesn't have to technically overtake them. The idea of them being in the outfield altogether is kind of what people are imagining.
Okay. Kyle's already out there. I like the fact that you've got two young prospects who are proclaiming that things are going to change for the Mariners. It's a difficult time to be a Mariners fan, especially when you look to starting next season, where you're not, Kelenic's not going to be in the big leagues. That's not going to happen. You can't expect to make the playoffs. I usually would think that it's premature or rash for guys who are at single A, aspiring to be double A players next year to make those sort of proclamations. I absolutely love it because it's exactly the kind of confidence that the Mariners need. That's what will put them over the top, is people that come in determined to change the course of that franchise's history and its culture.
I do want it from some guys that are already there though too. And I think that's big. I'll go back to 2014 covering the Houston Astros, who were where the Mariners are right now. They were a team that you weren't really sure who they had, what they had. Jose Altuve was in the midst of the first of four straight years in leading the American League in hits. He also led the American League in stolen bases that season, which is really impressive given how tiny the guy is. He said at one point during the year, and I think it was like in about July, that we are here to try to change the expectations for this team going forward. And then the very next year, they made the playoffs. They beat the Yankees in a one-game playoff, and they took the Kansas City Royals, the eventual World Series champions, to the brink. I mean, they had the game in the bag, but then Will Harris blew a four-run lead in the eighth inning of Game 4. Would have been the clincher for the Astros. Ultimately, they lose the series in five games. But that mentality was, I think, the building point for an Astros team that now is a juggernaut. I don't know if the Mariners ever get to that point, but you do need to have some people that are in the clubhouse that are actually thinking about what this can be and about setting a culture where you aren't going to accept mediocrity, and you realize that you have to fight through a lot to get out of the mediocre zone or the just bad zone, which is where the Mariners have been over the last couple of seasons, and change it. And it's tough to do that. I can imagine if you're a bunch of young baseball players, some of which are minor leaguers, or you're a bunch of journeyman baseball players who realize that you're not really that good, but hey, look, they're giving you a job here to play for a team. You're going to go and do your best, but at the same time, you realize, okay, this probably isn't a long-term thing for me if you're one of those players. And if you're a young player, the idea of being on a bad team can manifest itself and sort of just change the way that you look at things and maybe make you cynical, maybe think that things are never going to get better, maybe make you want to leave. They need this mentality, because this mentality is something that will actually keep them all together for the long haul.
It is Danny and Gallant. Earl Thomas set to return. He had some thoughts that I think every Seahawk fan will be encouraged to hear. That's coming up next.